Yeah, the industry has lots of challenges. I mean, number one challenge is, you know, innovation, investment of money. I mean, it's a huge investment of funds, and I think it doesn't come easy because of the fact that, you know, you have to try many drugs and one out of many, you know, succeed. And I think, you know, you have to look for the probability of success from phase one to phase two to phase three to commercialization and all that. So lots of failures happen, obviously, and only one out of maybe 100 may make it at the end of the day. So that is the biggest challenge. The second challenge is, you know, the pricing. You know, what is the gold standard currently? And then you're creating something better than the current gold standard. And can you remain in that pricing level where people can afford or the payers can afford, you know, the therapy? So that's the second challenge. Third challenge is...
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. Our episodes go live at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. India time every day. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior professional from the pharmaceutical world, Mac Javadekar. Mac, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Mac is now a pharmaceutical advisor for several U.S. companies, but he has spent 28 plus years as the pharma research director with Pfizer Inc. and post-Pfizer career, 11 years as an independent external advisor to many pharma, biotech, and companies connected to healthcare. So, Mac, let's talk pharmaceuticals now. Mm-hmm. When did you decide to enter the pharmaceutical world?
Yeah. So this is going way back when I was 12 years old. My uncle, you know, my father's cousin, he really was the pioneer. In 1962, he traveled to France and got his doctorate in pharmacy from France. And when he came back, you know, I was only 10 plus years old. And then that time he said, you know, pharmaceutical is an area which is going to grow and which is really going to make a difference going forward. And it will always be a growth area. So he kind of put a seed inside my head saying, you know, hey, people become either engineers or doctors, you know. So in India, at least that's how I saw it growing up. But then, you know, then I looked for, you know, hey, is there a pharmacy college out there that I can get myself enrolled in? And sure enough, I was living in Kolhapur, and in Karad, there was a College of Engineering, but they had a department of pharmacy, which was enrolling pharmacy students. So that's where, you know, the seed got planted, and that's how it all began.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then you moved to the US and you got involved in the research side.
Exactly. So I immigrated to the US because, you know, it was that time, you know, anybody who was applying, you know, got a green card. So I said, okay, you know, I might as well, you know, try and see, you know, what's out there in the US. I mean, there was no intent to leave India per se, but an opportunity came where, you know, hey, you know, my friend who was a colleague of mine at the UDCT, Bombay University Department of Chemical Technology, this is going back in 74, he said, you know, hey, you know, US, you know, why don't we try it out? And I said, why? You know, I'm happy here. You know, I mean, India was doing well, everything was going well. And but he said, you know, hey, there is nothing lost. You know, the worst thing is we go there, tour the world, and come back and settle back in India. But he really essentially compelled me to apply and got, you know, getting in, you know, into the US. So I said, okay, let's try it. And then I was happy to come out here. And University of Minnesota, you know, Professor Rippey, who was my advisor, he really said, you know, you can do well if you do well in the studies. So I took that as a mantra for you know, succeeding in life, you know. So I enrolled in the PhD program. I got my PhD in the end of 81, and Pfizer recruited me right there. So nice. I became a lifelong Pfizerite from 1982.
Fantastic. And for our viewers and listeners, you know, Pfizer is right at the forefront of the COVID challenges that are being handled. I think Pfizer's vaccine is also getting approved in India very soon. So, Mac, tell me, what goes into creating a formulation?
Yeah, so formulation is, again, there are two segments which, and I won't get into too much of details, but I think if you were to tell a layman, you know, what is a formulation and what does it take to create a formulation, mm-hmm. I think you have to think it two different ways. I mean, there is a small molecule and a large molecule, and biologics is a little complex. But people can get there and get formulations done in biologics as well as small molecules. Small molecules, you have to worry about three things. One is the stability of the small molecule, and then the compatibility of small molecule, you know, along with the excipients that you are incorporating in it, and then looking for, you know, that light saying, you know, it is compatible with the excipients, it doesn't degrade, it has got stability for X number of months in at certain temperatures and conditions. And then the most important is the in vitro release profile of the drug. So it dissolves and becomes bioavailable once you ingest something. And mm-hmm. and then same thing is true, you know, if it is parenteral or in an injection type system, then you have to make sure that all the formulations for the injection obviously is compatible with the system. So it's all about that, and biologic, same thing is true. So it's more complex.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was reading about you, you have worked on some very, very interesting and iconic brands, if I can use that from the pharmaceutical world. If it's not confidential, would you like to talk a little bit about them?
Yeah. No, as a bench scientist, you know, when I started out, you know, my title was research scientist and at the bench. I mean, it was essentially working in the laboratory roll up your sleeves and work on, you know, the new chemical entities, because mm-hmm. that's what Pfizer did. And Pfizer that time in 1982 was, I think, 95% small molecules. So mm-hmm. work with the, you know, aldose reductase inhibitors. So Pfizer was working on one of the aldose reductase inhibitors, very early stage compound, but then I got to work on it, which, you know, we called sorbinil those at that time, and then went to the phase 3 program. And then, you know, lo and behold, you know, in phase 3 trials, when, you know, hundreds of patients were studied in that stage, you know, a small group, about 2% of the patients got skin rash. And when they saw that, I mean, the drug was very efficacious mm-hmm. for what it was designed to do. But then because of the skin rash, you know, Pfizer decided not to pursue aldose reductase inhibitor. So this is kind of what I call the lesson learned. Mm-hmm. And that opened up, you know, my mind and saying, you know, hey, failure is not a bad thing, because you learn from it and you do better at the next thing you are doing. So mm-hmm. so then I got to work on Zoloft, which is sertraline hydrochloride, which is also, you know, it's a serotonin reuptake inhibitor mm-hmm. type drug for depression. And so Zoloft became a, you know, multi-billion dollar mm-hmm. product. And I got to touch on it as a formulator for the drug, and that was something that I never imagined, that, you know, the formulation that I designed, the tablet that I designed, you know, became multi-billion dollar product around the world. So that was the first one, and then followed by Zithromax, which was in-licensed by Pfizer, but then the formulation came under me, and then I got to work on that one as well, for a tablet as well as a sachet and some other, you know, Z-Pack, we called it. And so that was the next one. And then Viagra was another one where I could touch upon those for the faster onset formulation. Wow. So some of these, you know, iconic, you call it, formulation, well, that I could.
For my viewers and listeners, the fact that you were associated with Viagra is a big thing, because that's the only well-known brand across the world, though people may not know who manufactures it.
Yeah, I think Pfizer name, you know, came to light because of Viagra more than anything else. But now it is because of COVID vaccine.
I agree. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, that when you decided to join the pharma business, your uncle told you this is an industry that will always prosper. My question to you is that while the industry is booming, what are some of its challenges?
Yeah, the industry has lots of challenges. I mean, number one challenge is, you know, innovation, investment of money. I mean, it's a huge investment of funds. And I think it doesn't come easy because of the fact that, you have to try many drugs and one out of many, succeed. And I think, you know, you have to look for the probability of success from phase one to phase two to phase three to commercialization and all that. So lots of failures happen, obviously, and only one out of maybe 100 may make it at the end of the day. So that is the biggest challenge. The second challenge is, the pricing. You know, what is the gold standard currently? And then you're creating something better than the current gold standard, and can you remain in that pricing level where people can afford or the payers can afford, the therapy? So that's the second challenge. Third challenge is, IP can only remain for a certain number of years, and then once it off patent, then companies have to worry about, hey, how do you still squeeze, whatever out of that? And that's where 505(b)(2)s come in. Then that's where we worry about life cycle management and things of that nature. So those are the challenges.
So, companies like Pfizer and other large companies spend billions of dollars on research to be able to produce all these extremely good medicines. Now, from an Indian perspective, why is it that Indian companies don't spend so much money on research and wait for the end of the 30-year or 35-year period when the product comes out of IPR?
Yeah, so to answer that question, I think, as you know and everybody knows, innovation takes money, and to move a drug from, phase one to phase two to phase three, which is huge, and that's where the major amount is spent, it can take, $1 to $2 billion for a drug to go through. And not that the Indian companies cannot afford that, but what happens is, big pharmas have been tuned into doing all this, and they have experience of doing it. And now, obviously, the discovery model had changed as of now, as you know, because companies are now seeking, these post POC compounds coming from the smaller biotechs and in licensing those or acquiring those assets. So pharma had changed its model as well, but I think because of the heavy spend that is required, and it's the, what I call that is, spending with risk, and that risk taking is more prevalent with the Western pharma companies versus what I see the MNCs in India.
Interesting. And, across the whole world, including in the US now, there is a big move towards generics. What will generics do to the branded medical, pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, so generics are trying to become, what I call branded generics. And I think that is the trend. And the reason I'm saying that is because, there is always this 505(b)(2) angle. How do we make the drug, which is what I call, generic now, but there are a couple of things. If you can take that drug, generic drug, because it is already safety has been established on that, so you can de-risk that by creating some other indications for that drug. So it could be a novel indication and convert that for the new indication. That's a big, what I call the repurposing of the drug is number one. Number two, by creating 505(b)(2) type system, you can make it more bioavailable, maybe make it once a day instead of three times a day. Mm-hmm. So there are means to, kind of do better at the existing drugs, which are generic in nature, but you can utilize that. And then third thing is the fixed dose combinations. And those are becoming more popular because of the advantages they give you. So that's another third one.
Very interesting. And, you know, another movement that seems to be happening all over the world, but not really working, is governments want doctors to start prescribing salts. Doctors write brands.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? I mean, from a big company perspective, brands is necessary because of the billions you're spending.
Mm-hmm. So I think until the patent is still valid, I mean, obviously no company will have a generic available. So, so there is a patient loyalty involved in that space. And I think beyond that, I think, which is also important is to note that, you know, people, you know, once they get used to certain, you know, drug, you know, they don't want to change because something is available, you know, at a better price, you know, because of the value that drug has created. So I think, you know, until the drug becomes generic, you know, people stay on with that. But then again, there is a cliff, right? I mean, pharma companies see the cliff because generics, you know, two or three generic companies are already there producing that prior to even they becoming generic. So you are absolutely right. I mean, there is no way that pharma companies can protect their IPR beyond the scope.
Okay. And do you think doctors will ever switch to writing only salt on their prescription?
When you say salt, does that mean generics you're talking
about? I mean, you know, they don't want to write the brand name of the thing, but...
I see. So you're saying the generic name on it. No, I mean, see, that is something in pharmacies, as you'll probably know, I mean, with the Guardian that you established, you probably know, you know, the patient has a way, you know, at least in the US, I see, you know, they ask you, do you want a generic or do you want a brand? And this is in the pharmacy, they ask you. Doctors can prescribe, you know, obviously anything. So they would prescribe just with a generic name, but then the pharmacies will ask you, what do you want? And obviously, you know, there is a price differential, right? So those who are willing to pay more out of pocket, you know, they prefer the brand versus the other one.
Okay. So at least in the US, you have a choice. But in India, for example, the pharmacy, the pharmacist does not have the right to make a switch.
See, that is, that is different there because, and again, in India, I have seen, you know, people really don't use prescription. you can go to any pharmacy and get any prescription drug without a doctor's prescription. So again, I won't talk much about the Indian way of doing, but at least in the US, you know, the choice is given to the consumer or the customer to say, you know, hey, what do you want, you know, and then you can choose whatever you want.
Very interesting. So, Mac, I'm now going to move to the next segment of our conversation, which are some questions for you personally. Sure. My first question is that, you know, having, you know, spent so many years at the top of large companies, accompanied the president of the US on a trip to India, and now doing some amazing work in other organizations, what are some of the core values you believe
in? Yeah, so core values is, again, number one is credibility. You know, I mean, I think I respect that to be number one because that's your foundation. And I think, you know, honesty, credibility becomes a foundation. And once people trust you, never let that credibility go down. And no matter what, if you come across anything that does not suit, you know, that kind of criteria, you either shy away from that or move away from that and look for that credibility angle. And second thing, you know, the value that I believe is having honesty and loyalty. And I don't know why, but it comes from my father, I guess. But loyalty is something that I always believe in. So once I started working with Pfizer, you know, they gave me lots of opportunities and to work with directly with the president of R&D as well as with the CEOs and whatnot. And that gave me so much empowerment. And that empowerment creates confidence in not only you, but also that creates even bigger loyalty towards the company. And that loyalty buildup creates value. And those values become so critical to you because then you are using your network to take, you know, that advantage to the company. bring, you know, some of the best of the best things to the company, so that not only the company succeeds, but also, you know, you are looked upon as a person to bring value up for the company as well as for the others. So I think those are the things I really value the most. And and then also comes, you know, making sure that, you know, you are you are also, you know, making sure that there are no conflicts of interest. I mean, so all those things become, you know, very critical, because that's under honesty again. And
very interesting.
And if there is anything, you know, that comes to you saying it's a conflict, you kind of stay away from that and not be part of that. So that's what I mean.
Well said. And, you know, as you look back at life, what does success mean to Mac?
Yeah, success means, you know, you work hard at certain objectives. Okay, you have certain mission goals, missions that you lay out, and certain towards certain goals you create action items, and and once you execute on those action items and you see the fruits come through after a certain time, that's what the success is to me. And when I worked hard at working on, let's say, the formulation of Zoloft, you know, I mean, there were lots of failures on the way, but certainly, you know, once you succeed and say, Eureka, you know, it's a moment that you say, oh my God, you know, it works. And then that's where you feel, oh my God, you know, this is success. So that's how I define success.
Wonderful. And a follow-up question, Mac, is who or what has inspired you?
Yeah, so my inspirations have been, you know, many. And as I said, you know, my uncle was the first inspiration. My father really pushed me for the best in me. And he said, you know, always you have to, first of all, anywhere you go, my father's statement was, you have to establish sincerity. You know, that was his statement. And he worked in the government in India, you know, state government. He was deputy secretary for the state of Maharashtra, and he spent his entire life in the government. So I kind of knew, you know, he worked with the chief ministers and whatnot. So so his inclination to work with the government taught me a lot. And I think sincerity was the number one thing he taught me. And he said, you know, hey, you will never go wrong if you are sincere and honest. So those are the big things.
And Mac, my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to all your words of wisdom. What would your advice be to a young individual, say a young pharmacist, who's starting off on his or her career in the corporate world?
Yeah, so I think the first question, and obviously every person is different, but anybody who is, you know, has the interest in science, make sure you are driven by science, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, make sure your passion lies in that, because I've seen, you know, lots of people, you know, if I told them to go to, you know, pharmacy school, they say, you know, hey, it doesn't interest me. And that's okay, because your passion may be in the singing or arts or music, whatever. So go and do that. Do not mix, or do not try to, you know, change your passion and change that. So I think number one is passion. And if you are passionate about science and careers in pharmaceutical industry, I think the world is waiting for you, because as I said, the things are changing. And as you see, you know, the vaccines, I mean, that has become the norm today. you know, with the J&J news and the in AstraZeneca news, you know, Pfizer and Moderna are looking better and better every day. So my advice to the youngsters is, you know, as long as your passion is for science, look for the growth areas in that sciences. And the growth area change every few years. You look at that, and now, you know, CAR T's are getting lots of you know, kind of attention. And I think there are so many other things which are coming to fruition. I mean, continuous manufacturing, lyophilization, and some of the, you know, things that you see coming to fruition. I think people can take pride in learning those techniques and technologies and become experts. And I think sky is the limit. I mean, I think, you know, it's a great profession to be in. And I encourage all the youngsters to get to this and be the best they can be.
Fantastic. Mac, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for all the incredible knowledge you've given to me and to all the people who are going to be listening to us. I wish you good health and lots of success.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. I really appreciate everything what you do, and all the best to you. And I hope this is at least some inspiration to some youngsters.
I'm sure it will be. Thank you again. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.